You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator. What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
What is up, fellas? Welcome back to Convos Over Cold Brew with me, your host, Emma Abrahamson. Today we have a super fun episode with my friend Elise Cranny, who is also known as the 5K indoor American record holder as of a couple weekends ago when you're hearing this. She just ran 14:33 in the indoor 5K, which literally makes me want to barf because it is so incredibly fast. She's on the Bowerman Track Club, and she actually was on the podcast like way back in 2020. And a lot has changed since then. She made it to the Olympics, obviously became an American record holder, and has had a lot of breakthroughs. Today's episode was so fun too. We talk about so many random things, so I hope you guys enjoy it. Before we get started, we are so close to 1,000 reviews on Apple Podcasts. If you haven't rated and reviewed and you love the podcast, like you listen to it every week, it takes 15 seconds and it's a completely free way to support the podcast and it helps me out so much. So if you take the time to do that, it would mean the world. Also, make sure to follow us on Instagram at Convos Over Cold Brew Pod if you want to be up to date on the latest episodes and submit listener questions. Before we get started, I want to talk about one of my long-term sponsors of the podcast and sponsors of me. That is Inside Tracker. You guys know I swear by Inside Tracker. What Inside Tracker does is they analyze your blood biomarkers and then they take that data and provide you with a clear picture of what's going on inside you. Then they offer you science-backed recommendations for positive diet and lifestyle changes that are individual to your blood biomarkers and how to improve those blood biomarkers to optimize different levels. For me, I've been working every single day to optimize my vitamin D because that is so important. Also, going along with that, my B12. I've been taking vitamin D and B12 every single day. I take it all in my greens powder. Inside Tracker also keeps me on track because I get to check it off every single day on the app. They also have new recovery pro tips that take personalized health recommendations to the next level by offering science-backed recovery techniques that are conveniently delivered to you right after wrapping up your workout. Based on the specific duration and intensity of your workout, Inside Tracker will automatically provide you with simple yet specific guidance on the most efficient ways for your body to refuel and recover. This is the kind of personalized insight that's like typically experienced with exclusive and really expensive sports dietitians, but now it's available to you within the Inside Tracker app. All you have to do is make sure that your Garmin or Fitbit device is connected to Inside Tracker, turn on push notifications, complete your workout, sync your fitness tracking app within 30 minutes of your workout, and then you automatically get that recovery pro tip following your workout. Right now, for a limited time, you guys can get 20% off the entire Inside Tracker store. All you have to do is just go to insidetracker.com/Emma. It's also linked in the show notes as per usual. Now let's get into today's episode. Okay, Elise, You were on the podcast. I need to like look at what month it was, but it was all the way back in 2020, and we have so much to catch up on, and you've accomplished a lot since then, I will say. So I'm excited for our listeners to get the lowdown of what's been up with your life. But to start off, do you want to just give a little intro to yourself?
Yeah, I'm pumped to be back on the podcast. I'm Elise, run for Bowerman Track Club, live in Portland, Oregon right now, originally from Colorado, but right now we're at altitude training in Flagstaff.
Yeah, and you now have a new title to your name, American record holder. That is so exciting. For some reason, I got confused with the outdoor record and the indoor record. And then I was like, wait, how is that an American record? But then I was like, oh, wait, that's indoors. And that's even more impressive because running a 14:33 5K indoors, I don't know how you do it. I genuinely don't know how you run that fast. What is that per mile? you don't even think about it that way.
I think 14:35 is 70, so that's 440 per mile, so it's like slightly under that.
Oh my gosh, you literally ran my mile PR 3.12 times. I don't know how you do it. Did you know that you were running that fast? I mean, obviously you heard your splits, but like, did you know that you were going to run 14:33?
Honestly, no. We also like we came through the first 2K in 6 flat. So we were at like 15 flat pace. And then I think I took over the lead at like 2800 or 3K. And then I didn't really realize how fast I started running, but obviously I started running semi-fast because we like really started dropping down the pace. So that definitely started to hit me like the last like 600 to 800. I was like, oh yeah, and I feel like we've been cranking it down. But I was like, yeah, I was definitely shocked, I think, to see the like finishing time, especially after like our first 2K. I was like, okay, like we're gonna have to like crank it down to like run 14:47 and break the record. Like it's gonna be close. So then to like see that like Gabrielle and I were in the 14:30s was like, oh well, we must have really cranked it down then.
Yeah, not even close. Not even close. It was like breaking records by like 15 seconds. I was like, that's such a big margin. Does anyone understand that? That is so wild. I can't, especially after coming through in like 15 flat pace. How do you even, in that moment be like, it's possible to run 14:33? I feel like if I went through in 15 flat pace, I'd be like, oh, I'm definitely not running 30 seconds faster than that.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely didn't cross my mind. Like I'm saying, I think at that point when I took over, I was like, oh man, like, I feel like we got to start running fast to like, if we're going to even be able to break 14:47. So then I didn't think we'd be making up that much time, but somehow we did.
The fact that you say even break 14:47, like, I mean, was that like the main goal of the weekend, was to break the American record?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that was the main goal. Like going in, Shalane was like, the record needs to be broken. Like Vanessa ran there 2 years ago and was like less than a second off. So we were like, she was like, that record can't still be here. You guys got to break it. So, I think, yeah. And like the American record was also the North American record. So I think between me and Gabrielle and Courtney, we were like, we got to try to dip under that. So that was kind of the main focus of the weekend.
Someone's got to break it. One of the three. Well, that's really exciting. How did you guys like celebrate after? I feel like everyone had to be pretty stoked, including Jerry.
Yeah. Jerry was pumped as well. I think Shalane was also pumped, even though we broke her record. But again, I think she was like, it's time for it to be broken. So. I know, I was bummed that the guys were on a different day because the guys like absolutely crushed it the next day, but it was kind of sad that we couldn't like all celebrate with them. And the race was so late, like we got done pretty late. So we had some food and then we got ice cream. So nothing like super exciting. And then we were shipped back up the mountain, some drug testing, all the very exciting things.
Wow. Yeah. That sounds like a lot of fun. That sounds like, you know, even when you get to the top level, you still celebrate with like a burger and ice cream. Like,
it doesn't change. It's like since high school, right? It's like the same thing. You're like, wow, I can't wait to just like go get a burger and ice cream.
It's the simple thing. What do you think? think about that track makes it so fast, and why does everyone run that fast around there? I don't get it. I've never run at BU.
Yeah. Oh man. I feel like at this point, I feel like it's so much mental. Like it's, there's just so much hype around it. Like, I feel like you can't show up and like not be hyped because there's just, I don't know where it started, but I just feel like people started running fast there. Like, I mean, like forever. And it just, I don't know. It just feels like a really fast track. I also just loved, or like love 200 meter indoor bank tracks. I don't know. I feel like,
really?
Yeah, like, I don't know. I feel like a little like race car. Like it just is like the turns are so tight. You kind of just like get in a rhythm and you feel like you're just kind of like, you know, whizzing around. So I don't
know. It kind of makes me dizzy because it's so, so like tight. I don't know.
It is maybe really tight.
I'm just not a very big fan of indoors. I feel like I have always had the hardest time, unless it was at the Dempsey, which is basically an outdoor track thrown inside a dome. How do you like, what's the difference of like running indoors for you? Do you have like a different technique style? Ew, I hate how I'm like getting like technical on this podcast, but I am intrigued.
Really,
I am not a good indoor
really
runner.
And I'm, into it.
Yeah, like, so like technique style. No, but actually though, like do you like whip around the curves? Like, do you go up a little bit on the curve?
I think, I don't know. I'd say the biggest thing like is like, I don't know. This was like a smaller field, so it wasn't as big of a thing, but I feel like the biggest thing about indoor is just like getting out and getting in good position. Cause it just feels so tight. Like, I feel like you don't really feel like you can like move too much unless you're like you just don't have that much time to pass on the straights unless you're like going to like pass on the curves. And then you
no,
feel like
literally
you're, like,
that's
running
what I
uphill.
Feel like. You, like, where do you even pass? Because the straight lasts, I'm not even kidding, probably
3 seconds.
And you're like, okay, well, who can pass someone in 3 seconds? I can't. Maybe I just don't have a good turnover, but I'm like, there's no passing anyone. So
yeah, I think that's though. Like the biggest thing.
Yeah.
But I think, yeah, I kind of like the, like I said, the smaller like turns, because I feel like you just like can get in a really good rhythm and just kind of start like, just like crossing off the laps, because you kind of just feel like you're whipping around.
That is true. I feel like it's exciting because you feel so fast on it where you're just like zoom. It's like a race car.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
Did you like the Dempsey better than a 200 bank track?
Yeah, because I felt like I couldn't even maneuver around the track. I felt very like clumsy and weird. I mean, I don't want to like throw this out there into the world, but it is rumored that like taller people have a hard time on indoor tracks because it's harder to maneuver. And I agree. I mean, I just feel like I had the hardest time.
Yeah.
And I'm also not an aggressive runner. So I'm like, you can pass me, but I'm not moving, you know? So that was probably my issue. And then I didn't love the Dempsey either though. I felt like the Dempsey, the track was not bouncy at all. Like, I feel like you're running on like concrete for some reason.
That's why I'm shocked that you said the Dempsey. Like, Boston is like bouncy, and I'm like, the 200 meter like banked makes you feel like you get in a rhythm. I'm like, the Dempsey, you never know where you are, and the track is so hard. I don't know.
Why is that track so hard? It really is like extremely like dense. I will say that, like, I do like the 200 meters because it does feel more bouncy, but then a lot of, like, if you feel bad, then it just feels even, I don't know what it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think I just kind of have trauma from indoor season, honestly. Like, I was just never really in great shape, and single race I ran indoors, except for one of the Dempsey, was bad. So this is horrible. And why am I talking about myself? I'm so washed up. I should be talking about you who just broke.
No,
your record.
I love this. I'm getting insight into your thoughts and feelings on indoor. Okay. But I will say, I like ran, this last summer, I ran the Diamond League final 5K in Europe, and they like wanted to do this new thing where they like basically like built a track in the city center, and they had some events like in the city center, which like was very cool in theory, but they basically like tried to make an indoor track like on like in the middle of the city center, but it was like, I don't know, 500 and something. It was like a random distance, like 500 and something meters, but like,
ew.
It was like they, on the straights, it was just like track surface laid out like on the ground, and then they like had like built these things that were like kind of like banks, but they like weren't, like one of the sides was like a steeper bank than indoor, and the other side you basically went up like two hills, so like it was like one little bank and then a little straight and then another little bank. So honestly, that was like the last like semi indoor track I ran on. So when I got on the track to like do pre-meet at Boston, I was like, holy crap, this feels so much better, because I absolutely like died a horrible death in that race, and like was like you, I felt like I was falling off the track. I felt like I was like running up these hills and it was just absolutely horrible. So I feel like it made Boston feel even better.
That makes sense. Ew, like two hills.
Yeah.
I feel like the last thing that you want to feel during a track race is hills.
Yeah.
Like, why are there hills underneath me? It's supposed to be completely flat. Like 0 foot like, elevation gain, yeah, and loss. Wait, what meet was that?
It was in Zurich. It was the Diamond League final. They just like moved the 5K to like not be on the actual track, and like I think a couple of the field events.
This was outdoors?
Which was cool. Yeah, it was cool in theory, but like the actual track itself was just, it was not a jam.
Yeah, I feel like I watched that race, but maybe I didn't. I'm gonna need to go look this up on YouTube now. I'm very curious. And that's like a gross distance of a track.
Yeah,
over 400 meters. That's,
yeah,
that's too long.
Yeah, no, it was not it.
I feel like a 400 meter track already feels long sometimes. So to have 500 meters, oh my.
Yeah.
It's the opposite, yeah, of an indoor track, which is, yeah, like so short.
Yeah.
I love breaking down the technical aspects of track and field. It's definitely my forte and I'm really good at it.
We're really getting into the, you know, the nitty gritty.
Yeah. As someone who hasn't stepped foot on, racing on a track since 2018.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Okay, anyways, well, you also, I want to talk to you about the Olympics because you made it to the Olympics. Exciting. Congratulations.
Even thank you.
Kind of a long time ago, but not really in the grand scheme of things. How were the Olympics for you? What was that like? Yeah.
Yeah, it was a crazy experience. I think, I mean, I'm very glad that Chris and I had each other, like, thank goodness we both ran the 5K and like we ended up being roommates, which was huge. Just because I feel like with no like spectators or like family or friends over there, like it was so nice to like go through that together.
How do you know which roommate you're gonna get?
We didn't know until we got there.
They just like tell you, they're like, here.
Yeah, yeah.
So then why'd they pick you? Was it really just random?
I actually think that they were putting people with people from other event groups. So actually worked out because she made the 10K team as well and I didn't, so I think they paired us as almost being like a 5K 10K duo, which actually worked out really well.
That is,
I
don't so nice
think if that happened that we would have been roommates, so yeah, so that worked out really well. Yeah, the village was so cool. Like I didn't really know what to expect, but it felt like a mini city, and I think just being around like athletes from all sorts of different sports and all the different countries was something that was really cool. Like being in the dining hall and just seeing like athletes from all sorts of different countries was a really cool experience.
And then when you step foot on the starting line, what was that feeling like? Did you kind of have the mindset of like, this is like every other race? Because when you get to the Olympics, you're racing kind of people that you've already raced before at like Diamond Leagues or other world events, but did it feel different?
It felt different because that was like my first global race. Like I guess Carissa had run Doha, but like I hadn't really run against like many of those people before. Mm-hmm. So I think it was definitely like a bit intimidating standing mostly probably like in the call room and like warming up, because you're just like, oh my gosh, like there's like Safwan and like Helen O'Beary and people that you're just like, you've been watching for so long that are just like insane. And so I think that was kind of crazy, but I think I'm like glad that you have the prelim first, because I think it was kind of easier to look at that in terms of just like any other race. Like, okay, I've done so many prelims before, you know, like all throughout the NCAA system, like throughout like USAs and trials. So I think looking at it that way of just like, okay, I need to be in the top five and try to treat it like any other race of just like, okay, I'm just racing against, you know, maybe people I haven't raced before, but like the goal is still to like get top five to move on to the final. So I feel like in that regard, it was like, okay, I'm running on a 400 meter track, doing the same thing, trying to accomplish the same goal of being top five. So I think that was definitely helpful.
Yeah. And then just not overthinking it and freaking out, being like, oh my gosh, I'm at the Olympics. Yeah. I mean, you can a little bit, but just not like overcomplicating it.
Yeah. Probably. Yeah, exactly.
How was like your experience after the Olympics? Did you feel like I don't know, you learn stuff, or like, I know a lot of people, I don't know, they kind of have the post-Olympic blues where it's like you accomplished this big thing. How did you kind of recover from the Olympics?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing, honestly, was just like, it was so eye-opening. Like, I feel like it was, again, like the first time that I feel like I'd run really like on the global stage. And I feel like I just saw what it took. Like, I think being in that final and just like getting our butts absolutely kicked and just like not even being in the race, like the last 2K was like actually like in the moment, like felt so defeating, but like was really inspiring of like, okay, this is what it takes to like basically jump to this next level. And like just getting, you know, focusing on like, okay, how can I like take this experience and like learn from it to motivate me. And I think that was super motivating and helpful. Like, I'm glad that I raced a few more times after the Olympics, because I think that kind of helped with, you know, experiencing any sort of like post-Olympic blues. Was like, I was just like, okay, I'm still in my season, I'm still racing, and I'm excited for the opportunity to like put some of these lessons that I feel like I've learned into practice in races. And I think that was helpful also in being like, okay, the season's still continuing and you're still racing, instead of just being kind of like this huge like downfall and crash after the Olympics. So I think that was actually like helpful in the grand scheme of things to like have a few of those races and then just have it be like such an incredible learning experience and be like leaving there like hungry for more. I think, yeah, it was like very motivating.
So you say that you like learned or saw what it took to be at the top or like in the race, I don't know, for medal position, I guess, at the Olympics. What do you have to work on, do you think?
Yeah, I think, I mean, I feel like it's just forced me to bring like a lot more intention to my training. Like, I think the way that the final went was very like the first 3K, it was very like fart looking type style. Like, it felt like we would like, you know, sprint a 300 and then jog 100. And so it's like that sort of race, like Shalane and Shelby, like a bunch of people had told us like that's usually kind of how championship 5K like style races go. But I think I actually feel like we had to get in there and like actually feel like what that felt like, and not just hear it from someone.
That's so interesting. I feel like that's not something that you really see from the, like, just watching it on TV.
You can't tell, because like we rewatched the race afterwards and I was like, wow, I feel like this is doing such a disservice, because it felt like such an accordion when you were in it, and then you like can't tell. But I'm like, it literally felt like we would like get disconnected and they'd slow down, so we'd reconnect and then they'd like sprint again.
Well, you can I remember watching that and being like, okay, they're like, oh my gosh, they're off the back. And then it's like, wait, they're
and
back.
Then we'd be like,
so I guess you could see it, but I feel like in the race, it would probably feel so dramatic.
Yeah.
That's so wild. I guess I didn't even think about that. I mean, I didn't really run the 5K in college or anything, but what I feel like people don't really do that in NCAA racing at all.
No. Uh-uh.
Or even like regular pro racing on like the US circuit. I feel like people aren't.
Yeah.
I wonder why that is.
I don't know why, but like, I think in regards to that, it was just like, okay, like how can I be more intentional in practice and like working on like, okay, like a race like that, like you never get in a rhythm, so it feels bad from the beginning, but like you can keep going. And I think like I kind of let, like it kind of panicked a bit and was like, oh my gosh, like we're a lap in and this like feels so horrible. And like, you're looking at the clock and you're like, we're not even running fast, but like it feels, or like as fast as we could be, and it feels so horrible. But I think like, I don't know, just that, for example, you know, being like, okay, you can like weather the storm, you can, you know, work on like your strength and in training and practice so that you can like better handle those pace changes or things like that. And just being like, again, I think, yeah, for me, it's just been like the intention in practice. Like, okay, you know, the people that are like up there, like meddling in medal contention, like you're just like, okay, they're showing up to practice each day, being like super intentional about not only like how they're training, but everything else they're doing. And I think, you know, when I thought about it that way, it was like, okay, I think I can find, you know, the 1% here or there that I could be doing better. You know, like it could be like, I don't know, getting, you know, prioritizing my recovery a little bit more, or like, you know, getting like really consistent massage so that I can like handle the training a bit more. Like, I don't know, just little things like that, that I'm like, I feel like was eye-opening and like, okay, you could like be doing these little things a little bit better that can add up to make like a big difference.
I'm so curious, because I feel like as a pro runner, you have to live such a disciplined lifestyle, especially like you're saying, I mean, at that level, what is like your vice? Like, what do you feel like you need to work on the most, or something that you kind of like slack on the most?
Oh, let's see. Honestly, I think the sleep piece I could still be better at, like just like kind of more consistent, like naps or like going to bed, you know, trying to go to bed more at the same time every day. Like, I think sometimes it's really easy to just like get distracted like later at night and then be like, okay, yeah, I probably like should have gone to bed earlier and like gotten a little bit more recovery. Like, I think that's a thing that I would probably say is, yeah.
Yeah. Everyone has their little things. I mean, no one's perfect, you know?
Yeah. But
it's just wild. Like, the lifestyle that you guys live, it is so crazy disciplined that it takes like a specific type of person to be able to do it. Like, you and Carissa, I just admire you guys so much because I can't fathom living like so disciplined like you guys do. And I feel like people don't really like understand that until you kind of see it happen.
Yeah.
I don't know. Or just like living with Carissa. I mean, I wasn't obviously analyzing what she was doing every day and I'm not at altitude with her, but like, I don't know, just like how much you guys work out and then always just like needing to rest. And then I don't know. There's just so many little things that go into it that people don't understand.
And I especially, feel like it's,
yeah.
I feel like it is the little things. It's like, you can't explain that to someone, but it's like, I think that's the other piece you have to try to work on too, though, is like, cause you don't want to like burn yourself out. Cause like, if you think about it, it is like so different than like a 9 to 5. And like, it's not like you ever like quote unquote, like leave work. It's like, you could always be like, you could drive yourself crazy being like, I could technically always be doing more or be getting like more rest or more recovery. So it's like, you kind of have to find like, okay, what works for you without being just like, so locked in that you make yourself like absolutely miserable. Cause I think that's like a slippery slope you can definitely go down where you're just trying to be like, I need everything to be like perfect, which like will just drive you mad.
Yeah. That also was an interesting point because you gotta be sane enough to be like, all right, that's my limit. I can't do anymore. And then also like balancing, just doing everything, like doing the most. Oh my gosh. I can't even imagine. I feel like that would drive me, like even thinking about it kind of drives me insane already. Thinking about like finding the balance.
Yeah.
And being happy with it and being like, I'm doing enough. I'm fine. I don't need to go Normatec now for the second time today. You know? Wow. Well, that's really interesting.
You're sitting there, like you could be like, I could be doing more. So I think, I think that's where it's like, you have to just find what works best for you. And I think like really like focus and own that and be like, okay, this is what's working best, because otherwise you'll just like drive yourself absolutely crazy.
Yeah. Do you feel like you compare yourself a lot with your teammates or anything? Because you guys are, I mean, living together right now in Flagstaff and everything, so obviously you see basically what everyone is doing every day.
Yeah I feel like that was like a steep learning curve like when I first joined, because I think it's like really easy to get caught up in that. But I think that goes back to kind of what I was just saying about like finding, I think that's what I've like really tried to work on. It's like, find what works best for you, where you're like so confident in what you're doing that like, you're like, okay, everyone is like doing things slightly different and that they know that that works best for them. But then you don't even like question if like, oh, if this person's doing that, like, do I need to be doing that? Cause you have like found what works for you. And I feel like, that's something I've like really been trying to work on over the last year, is like, okay, like your body feels best when you like do this in the weight room or when you do this for recovery. And so, you know, really focusing on that. So then you don't get caught up, because I think when you start to compare, it's like, then you question what you're doing and then you're just like so easily swayed. And then you kind of just, again, you like go crazy. Cause you're like, I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing, but it's like, you're supposed to be doing like what feels best for your own body. And like, everyone's so different. So I think like consciously trying to work on that. But it doesn't come naturally for sure. You have to like really be like, okay, is this working for me? And like, I need to be like confident in what I know works for me.
It's so crazy though too, because I feel like that happens almost at every level. Like, it probably happens in high school where you see someone else doing some extra strides or something, you're like, should I be doing that?
Yeah.
And then in college, like, you have to, I don't know, deal with living with other people on your team and then seeing people way more than you did in high school. So it's probably the same thing where you're like, okay, this person's doing this, like, should I be doing that? And then it's the same thing as in pro running.
Yeah.
So it's crazy how that kind of aspect never really goes away. It's just, you really got to trust yourself. But also through all that time, you probably deal with a lot of like trial and error of what you try a bunch of stuff and just end up like, I don't know, as you get better, better and more into the pro scene, you probably know yourself a lot better than you did when you were in high school. So.
Yeah. And I guess that's where like, I feel like part of, like, maybe not comparison, but like being around people is like good. Cause it's like, I feel like some of the things that I do now are things that like I learned from people, like when I joined the team, or things that you like you know, learn from people in college. Like you're like, oh, this person does this. And like, I want to try that, you know? And then you find that like, it works for you. Like you said, you go through the trial and error, but I think some of the things we like adopt, we like learn from other teammates or people, which I think is really cool too. Cause then like, maybe they're doing something that you were like, oh, like that could help me, you know, like, I don't know, taking up some salt bath could like help me recover. Like I never used to do that. And then like Courtney and Carissa do that so much. And like, when I started living with them, like at altitude camps, I would be like, oh, I'm going to try that. And I'm like, oh, it's like pretty nice and relaxing. And now I like, you know, sometimes we'll do that. And like, that wasn't something that I used to do before. So I think things like that make it fun as well to like figure out like, okay, what can I learn from the people around me?
Yeah. Learning from your elders and your peers, exactly. I guess. Do you like altitude training?
Yes, I love altitude training. Probably because I'm from Colorado, so like,
oh yeah,
I don't know, being anywhere in the mountains or at altitude, and I think just being like born and raised at altitude, I like feel strong training here and like dipping down into sea level after you've been at altitude for a while. So
I feel like you have a little bit of a level up there compared to other people.
Yeah,
like I'm used to the skinny air, you know.
Exactly, it is hard like being away from home for sure for like big chunks of time, and like I don't know, just like renting a car, so then you're like, you just don't have your normal freedom because you're like sharing a car with your whole household, you know, like there are things that are definitely like you just don't have your own space. But I like being at altitude, and it's like fun to be as a team training together and like, I don't know, a more cohesive environment than when people are kind of living all over in Portland.
Yeah, and I feel like, I mean, when you go to camp, well, your camps are so long, but when you go to camp, it helps get you in the zone too. Like you're really dialed in and less distracted a lot of the time. I mean, just knowing like Carissa and I's living situation, I think being at camp is probably a little bit more dialed in approach than our house was. But what do you like about Flagstaff specifically? Do you like do a lot of things around there? What even is there to do?
We don't do a ton out of like, set of training, but I think it's like a fun place to be just because there is such like an incredible running community here. Like you just always run into people like out running, like groups that are like up here doing altitude training, like New Balance Boston has been up here, but then like also there's just like so many people that are like based out of here for training. So like, I don't know, running into like a couple of weeks ago, I was just like doing a run and I like ran into Sarah Hall and like got to run with her for a bit, like after she set the American record in the half. So like that was really cool, and so that piece is really fun. And then like we will often go to Sedona to work out, and it's like, I don't know, just being down there with all the like, you know, beautiful like rocks and driving through there and like warming up and cooling down on those trails is really fun. So yeah,
I feel like Flagstaff is the new Boulder. Like everyone is there. It's popping off, people are moving there, it's just wild out there.
I feel like so many people are moving here.
I know. I feel like Bowerman's about to move there next.
It's a place to be.
Yeah, for real. Quick little intermission here to talk about today's sponsor, one of my favorite sponsors, which is Gooder. You guys know I rock my Gooders almost every single day when I'm out for a run. Gooder makes $25 active sunglasses for anyone. They are lightweight, comfortable, and they don't move when you run, which is amazing, and it's all for only $25. I also love that they're all polarized because the sun shines very strong here in San Diego, and I need polarized glasses so that I can see where I'm going when I'm running. They have really funky names like this one that I'm holding right now. I'm not your bro, brah. You can browse through their website and I know that you'll find a pair that speaks to you. I have so many pairs of Gooder sunglasses and I just rotate between them every day because I love them that much. I also get compliments on them all the time because they're really good quality and they're just very stylish. It's also a great gift idea for one of your running friends, and treat yourself to a pair or two. Go to Gooder.com, that's Goodr.com, and get 15% off your entire order when you use code COLDBREW at checkout. All orders over $50 get free shipping in the US as well. That is 15% off with code COLDBREW at www.goodr.com. Look good, run Gooder. Now let's get back into chatting with Elise. I got a ton of questions, of course, so we can go through those.
Okay, let's do it.
What are like your main goals for running? What do you want to accomplish in this sport?
Just like, not this, just like
in just sport overall in general. Yeah.
I would say just like would love to make another Olympic team in 2024. I would say, like, I mean, the first pressing goal, I guess, would be to make the world team. I think, like, having worlds in Eugene is something that's, like, so special and unique. So that's, like, the primary goal. And then in the future, I just think, like, being around, you know, teammates that have won medals is, like, being up there, like, contending for medals. And I think this is something, you know, that Carissa and I talked a lot about after the final is, like, I'm pretty sure, like, the highest American finish in the 5K at a global championships for women is 7th place. So, like, really trying to, like, continue to, like, move American middle distance and distance running forward on the global scene is something that really excites me. So, yeah, I would say, like, world championship and Olympic medals are, like, probably the big end goal. Mm-hmm.
Those are some good goals. Why? This is just a question for me. Why did you move from the 15 to the, like, oh my gosh, I can't even imagine moving from the 15 to the 10K.
To the 10? Like, oh my gosh.
Yeah. What was that decision? Yeah. I'm sure Jerry probably played a big part in that one as well.
I was not too pleased at first. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he was like, we're going to do a 10K. And I was like, absolutely not.
Oh my gosh, I can't imagine being sentenced to a 10K.
Yeah.
Obviously, it played out in your favor, though. But yeah, I guess take us through that process.
Yeah, I think, I don't know. I think, like, just as I've been able to get more consistency, like, training with Bowerman, like, my strength has come a long way. And I think he was like, you know, let's try to do a 10K and kind of put that strength into practice and, like, see if it's an event for you eventually. I think it came a little quicker than I thought. I thought maybe, like, I would eventually move to it, but, like, maybe a little further down the road.
Maybe a couple years down the road, you know, when the speed starts going away.
So I feel like I'm still always, like, in his ear of, like, wanting to do more 1500s. I think especially, like, with Gabriella and, like, her sister Lucia just joined and they're just so speedy. So, like, wanting to do, you know, maybe some more, like, 15 specific sessions with them and get in a couple more 1500 races, because that's still, like, I still love the 15. It holds such a special place in my heart. But the 5K is, like, is really growing on me. But, like, I'm not completely sold on the 10K yet.
What would you say is your favorite event? Would you say it's still the 15?
Oh, it's so hard, because I'm, like, I'm definitely starting to like the 5 a lot more, but I think the 15 might still be my favorite. It's just so, like, quick and, like, exciting the whole time, you know, and it's like
you just rip the bandaid really off. You don't have to be out there in your own head for
You don't have to think, like, am I going too fast? Like, it's just like, and I think this is what I think Gabriella was saying this, I totally agree. It's like, if you, like, go out too fast in the 15s, like, maybe you have to deal with dying for, like, 300 meters. But, like, if you, like, go out too fast and screw yourself over in, like, a 5 or a 10K, like, you're, it's like a death march for, like, a long time, you know? Like, it's not like that's like, it's like 5K in Zurich. Like, I was like, you know, it was like a death march for, like, 3K. And I was like, this is just, like, absolutely horrible. Like, I have literally 2 1500s left that I have to run. And I'm, like, absolutely just, like, getting obliterated.
Like, yeah. That's like the 1500, if you're dying, it's like, yeah, like you said, 300 meters of throwing yourself a pity party.
Yeah.
Other ones. And, like, I don't know, if you feel bad in, like, a 5K, I feel like it's just so much more dramatic. Like, that last, like, just dying is so much more dramatic in your head. And you're like, this carnage is too much to handle.
Well, because you just feel like you just keep, like, slowing down and slowing down and slowing down.
1500, you're like, I can finish this. I will finish this soon. It'll be over soon. No one. Looking.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. But, like, dying in a 10K. Oh,
yeah.
Dealing with getting lapped and stuff.
That's a thing. Like, when you start to get lapped, like, then that's another whole nother level. Gosh, like, the chances that you get lapped in a 15, like, very, very low.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, that makes sense, man. I literally can't imagine running 6 miles on a track all out. So, like, just being in your head for that long, I don't think I could deal with it. Like, I feel like that would be more hard for me rather than the physical. I mean, everything would be hard for me now because I'm so washed up, but talking about my old self, like, dealing with my thoughts,
being in your head for, like, 30 plus minutes.
Yeah. Like, a 6K cross country was so hard for me. Doing it on the track for 30 plus minutes, I literally don't even know what I would do. I think I would drive myself insane. And I would convince myself to step off the tracks a little bit too.
You just, like, you cannot look at the lap counter for, like, what feels like a long time. Cause you don't want to, like, look up there and see, like, 19 laps. Like, Carissa and I joke about this all the time. Like, at the trials, like, the official was like at the lap counter was like yelling out like every single lap, like 22 laps to go, 22 laps to go. Like you couldn't ignore it. And it was just like, absolutely not. We do not need to know that we have 22 laps to go. Like maybe you told that man to do that. Six laps to go or five. Like we do not need to know when we're still in like double digit land. Like no,
especially that race. Like please don't tell me how many more I have to go in this heat.
Yeah, exactly. You're like, I felt miserable like a lap in. So
that's like stabbing a sword deeper into you after you already have one in you. So
exactly
analogy, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Okay. Next question. So I feel like over the years, you've had like a lot of injuries or like in college, I feel like you were always, maybe not always, but a lot of, you had a decent amount of injuries over the years. How did you keep a good attitude after like having setbacks repeatedly?
Yeah. I mean, I definitely think there are times in college when you're like in the midst of it, that it was like really hard. Like I was just like, oh man, like you just quite like, I was just like, is my body just like not made to run? Like this is not working. But I think like, I don't know. I think just having like teammates and coaches around me that were like really supportive, and like, especially like Coach Mill at Stanford, he was just like, I don't know. He was always really helpful and like, okay, the environment at Stanford is like really intense. So I think it's just like, you know, it's harder to recover. It's making things worse. And he was like, your best running is like going to be ahead of you after college. And I think that was something that like I really held on to and something that like continued to like excite me. And I think in those periods of time where I was injured, just being like, okay, like really having kind of that long-term vision in mind and like those long-term goals that I feel like I had like had like starting in high school about like wanting to like make teams and like win medals. And so like trying to hang on to that and be like, okay, this is like a long, long-term process.
Yeah. That's so interesting too. I talked to Steven like a decent amount. And I feel like one of the main reasons that he was also really successful, and I mean, now he's been a little bit banged up, but is because Coach Mill believed in him so much and made it clear. And I feel like it just shows the importance of having a coach that believes in you.
Yeah.
Because if you're struggling or like, I don't know, someone like Steven, who is definitely like a developmental athlete. That sounds like a diss, but it's not. But just having like a coach that really believes in you is so powerful.
It's huge. I feel like that's where I'm like, I feel like coaches or just like anyone who can play that role, like can't underestimate, I don't know, just the impact they can have. Like, I don't know. I've thought about that so much recently. I'm like, that's honestly like so much more important than even the training. Like if you're giving someone training, but they like don't believe in the training or they don't believe in themselves, like honestly, you could do any sort of training and it like doesn't matter. But having someone that like, I don't know, believes in you and is like, this is what you can do. Like that's even how I felt like my coach that like started coaching me in high school, Jason Hartman, he was like, so like, he was someone that like, I don't know, believed in me before I believed in myself. And he like, see, you know, he was like, you're going to be able to do these things before he even like, I don't know. It was like, I had shown nothing that could indicate that, but like feeling like you have someone that like believes in you is like, you're going to be able to like do all of these things is just like super motivating and inspiring. And then you're like, okay, like, yeah, I guess I can do that. Like, I trust this person and they say that I can, and they believe in me to do it. And I think that makes a huge difference.
Yeah. And I feel like honestly, you need kind of an outside source sometimes to start believing in what seems unimaginable to you.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
is crazy. Like I had, this is so random. When I was a senior in high school, this random dude that started like strength training me, like helping me with strength training, was like, you are going to break 440 in the mile. And I was like, no, I'm not. I'm never going to be able to do that. I don't know why I thought it was so outrageous at the time, considering I like, had run 450 already at this point. Yeah. I don't know why I was like, no, that'll never be possible. But I think even just having that random strength training guy tell me that, I was like, maybe I can do that. Like maybe I don't know, just having someone tell you something that you don't really ever think about or something that you don't even think is possible, I feel like is actually really powerful and you just can't underestimate it. Like, I feel like belief, especially at someone like your level, means everything. I mean, training, obviously you guys train super hard, but the mental side of it is so big.
So big. Yeah. Well, that's like you were saying, like, maybe you might've never thought like, oh, I can break 4-4. Like that might've never crossed your mind at all. You were just like, oh, and then like someone outside like tells you that. And then you're like, maybe I can. Then you like start working toward that and like feeling like you can and like getting momentum. And then,
Yeah. So it's crazy. So everyone, I don't know what the advice is there, but maybe have some stranger tell you that you can run faster. Yeah. It'll help you.
Find people that believe in you.
Yeah, just surround yourself with people that believe in you. I think that's a good takeaway. Okay, when you have a bad practice, how does Jerry respond? And how do you handle also having a bad practice?
Yeah, I think something that I've really like about Jerry is that he always sees the bigger picture, and his big thing, especially just around distance running, is it's the consistency. It's the day in and day out and the weeks and the months that you string together. So it's not any one workout or any one day. And I actually feel that mentality is super helpful, because he anytime I have a bad workout, or anyone on the team does, it's just you just had a rough day. We'll, be working out again in 2 days and you'll be ready to go. And I think kind of not blowing it out of proportion is actually really helpful, because it's so true. It's it's just one day, and it's not one day that makes or breaks you. So I think his approach to that and being chill about it also is really helpful, from an athlete's perspective of being I just had an off day today, but I did the best I could. I salvaged the workout with, even being an off day as best as I could. And I know I'll get better from the bad days and fighting through them as much as I can, and know that a good day will be coming again soon. So I think not blowing any, honestly, even on a good day, not, getting too down about a bad day or too high about a good day, but trying to be
the best athlete ever.
Exactly. I mean, do that to get some confidence, but
do that
not,
in private,
not
though.
Too big.
Yeah. That is good advice though. I feel even when it comes to racing, kind of going through the season of just not getting too excited over everything, or not too bummed about it, is the way to go, because
yeah.
I don't know, you just got to be level-headed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Until you make the Olympics, then I feel you can celebrate maybe a little more than usual.
Then an
or break the American record, maybe you could do that. I don't know, that kind of deserves some extra celebration. An extra scoop of ice cream.
Whoa, we're getting too crazy.
does Jerry ever yell? I've never met Jerry in my life. I don't even think I don't even know if I would be able to recognize him out of a crowd of people. I literally have no idea what he looks like. But does he ever get mad? Does he ever get angry or yell?
He doesn't really yell. Yeah, I feel like for the most part he's pretty he's pretty even keel, pretty level-headed.
What does he get annoyed about the most on the team?
Oh man.
I should just have Jerry on so he can answer all these questions.
Yeah, you should.
I don't know how to get in contact with him, but
he's very off, any
yeah,
sort
he,
of
he doesn't really seem like he would
social media. He really
seem to come
himself.
On Combs Over Cold Brew.
I feel sometimes we barely see him outside of workouts. We're what does he do all day? So maybe podcasts. Maybe he's secretly just doing a bunch of podcasts.
Yeah, it could be. I'll need to look that up. Okay. Well, enough questions about Jerry. He has gotten too much time on the show. Someone asked, what's your go-to breakfast?
Oh, my go-to breakfast is Picky Oats beet chocolate oatmeal.
Mmm.
Yeah, that's my typical day, or any sort of I don't know. They also have really good pancake mix. So sometimes I'll do that, some sort of egg scramble and pancakes.
That sounds delicious. Yeah. Also beet oats. I'm just imagining going out onto the street right now outside and being hey, do you want some beet oats? I have them for free in my bag. Who would accept that other than
no. Okay. They're not, it's just it's beet chocolate, so it's mostly chocolate, dates, almonds, and it's some beet powder that makes it the color of beets, but it tastes nothing like beets.
No, I completely trust you on that. I'm sure I would absolutely love them. And so
I just don't think it's not chopped up beets in my oatmeal that I'm eating.
I know, but I'm just imagining telling anyone that I beet oatmeal and they would throw up on me. But now I want to try
it. It's really good. Everyone, all your listeners should go try it.
Everyone go try Picky Oats beet chocolate flavor, according to Elise. But if it's
great.
Bad, blame it on Elise, not me. I'm sure it's not
really
bad,
good. Actually.
Yeah. Picky Oats, don't hate me, Lauren. I don't know you, but don't hate me. Okay. How often do you guys lift?
We lift usually 2 to 3 times a week. So usually we'll do it kind of depends on the person. I usually do legs on hard workout days, so twice a week, and then do some core in conjunction with those days, and a third day, so 2 to 3 times a week.
Nice. Swole. One of your teammates, actually, undisclosed member of your team, asked, what is your greatest fear in life?
Oh, no. No. That's not a podcast for me question. Absolutely not. That is
what? That's not even that bad of a question. It could be so much worse.
Oh, my gosh. My greatest fear. Oh, man. I feel like I'm just, like, so terrified of, like, getting older and, like, looking back on your, like, I just feel like that I've read so many things about, like, you know, people that are older that, like, reflect on their life, and they just are, like, I wish I would have, like, not spent so much time, like, worried about, like, stupid things or, like, stressing. Like, I feel like I, like, worry about that, like, later on in life, and just, like, reflecting and looking back and being, like, wow, why did I waste so much, like, unnecessary, like, stress and energy on things that didn't matter?
That is a good answer to that question. And I feel like everyone kind of has that. But no one ever really reflects on the day-to-day. No one's ever like, oh my gosh, I really need to stop worrying about like this, because what if I die and then I, whatever.
Yeah.
This is so morbid. Wow, this is getting deep. I'm crying right now. I'm like setting fears. I'm going to go to bed thinking.
But, okay, this is like, this didn't get really deep, but we had this conversation on a run the other day of like, would you be like living your life differently if you like knew you had a year to live, which is like a scary thought. But then it's like, in some ways, it's like, if you would do a bunch of things differently, then like, maybe you should change how you're living now, because like we're not guaranteed to like live like 70 more years, but we just like live our life that way. But yeah, anyways, that's getting into a hole.
Oh my gosh, well, what was the answer? Would you change your life? Would you change everything that you're doing?
Well, we were having like a discussion of like, okay, even if you like love running and you're so passionate about it, like if you only had like a year to live, like would you be up at altitude like grinding, or like would you be like
up doing track workouts 3 times a week and running and normateching every day?
Yeah, I think we would make some slight changes to my last year of life. I think I just might get out and experience a little bit more instead of like run and then like, yeah, sit inside and normatech the rest of the day and then run again. I would definitely keep like running, but I think it would just probably be more like, I don't know, traveling and seeing the world and like eating good food and like having wine. I don't know, just like doing things a bit differently. But
yeah, just living.
It's a question like you can reflect on as well.
Okay, I will be reflecting on that. Maybe I should leave my apartment more often. That's my. I should probably leave my. I don't think I would be like laying on my couch for 5 hours a day knitting. Maybe I don't think I would be. I might like spend it doing something else more meaningful. Oh my gosh, what if I died and like the last thing I did for like the last month was just knit?
Is that what you've been doing?
Yeah. Well, I got a concussion last Monday. So I haven't really been able to do that much. So I've been knitting.
What are you knitting? Have you made anything cool?
No, I'm just in the middle. Here, I'll show you. My viewers can't even see this. Oh my gosh, I have to take my arm. It's not cool because this is the first thing I've knitted in so long. I'm just knitting a scarf.
Wait, so that's really cool.
I mean, it's extremely boring and it looks like poop on the camera right now. But I'm doing half this color and then half, there's like a cream colored yarn right there on the couch.
Oh my gosh,
like a little dude. I think
it, are honestly, you gonna wear it, like, or are you gonna gift it? What's your plan when you finish this masterpiece?
I have no idea. I don't wear scarves, so I have to think about what I'll be doing with this scarf. It's just been fun to pass the time, and like, you know, I have no life and I'm 80 years old and I like to knit. But everyone told me actually on my Instagram when I was like, I need hobbies that don't involve like my phone screen, because I've been spending way too much time on like screens and computers. Yeah. And phones, and everyone's like, knit. And I was like, I used to knit, like maybe I'll take it back up again, but I don't wear scarves.
Well, maybe you need to do like a giveaway with all your fellas.
Yeah, I can be like, hey guys, who wants this fugly
scarf that I made? And it's even more meaningful because it was made by you.
Handmade with my sweaty hand.
You put in some major work.
Really though, like this takes hours. I don't know how people sell this is so random. I don't know how people sell like hand knitted items, because the time it takes to knit these things, I'm like,
yeah, does
anyone make money on these things? Because I don't know how long it's taking me to get like this isn't even halfway through the scarf yet.
Hours. And it's like hours. That's a scarf. Like, how do you make how do you then like sew to get like, if you're making like a shirt or a sweater?
I don't know. There's like ways that you can do it. There's like tutorials that you can follow online, but I'm like, how does anyone sell that for profit? You have to spend like over 24 hours on one of these things. So I'm like, I don't know. These are things that I need to think
maybe
about.
Maybe you need to speed knit.
I need to knit for speed. Need to do reps.
You need to practice, do some knitting intervals.
My hands need to, my like fingers need just like a little bit more work, and they need little extra muscles. Before I know, I'm gonna have little muscles growing on my fingers. Oh my gosh, is anyone even listening to this podcast anymore? I don't even know.
Okay, gotten so off track.
So off track. Everyone's like, I don't knit and I don't care about knitting. Okay. One last question from Morgan Pearson, the triathlon guy.
Yeah.
He asked, are you going after the American record in the 10K in March?
Oh, wow. That's a very specific question.
I know. I was like, whoa, Morgan, like, really?
Wow. Wow. Does Morgan want me to go after the 10K American record in March?
I don't know. That's why I'm asking you. I'm like, is there something I don't know? Am I like?
I will be running a 10K in March. I'm not sure yet what the plan is regarding pace, but I will be at the 10K in March.
Yeah, I saw, is that the 10 or whatever?
Yeah, yeah.
There's some good people on that.
Yeah, I feel like it's gonna be a really good race, so.
Yeah, sad I'm not gonna be commentating this year. I commentated last year's.
I know, why not?
You're not, I don't know, I'm really bad at commentating though. I don't know enough stats. Once again, I'm not really a stat woman. I'm more of a, let's talk about knitting with my friends kind of woman, you know? So.
I thought you were like a technique gal.
Now I am after this podcast. I know everything about technique. Everyone asks me everything about people's stats and track differences. And don't ever ask me those questions because I will leave you on read and not reply. Okay.
I cannot imagine commentating a 10K. Like, I just feel
fun,
like
there's, but it was hard. It was long.
Way too much time. Like, I don't know what you would like, especially like a setup race that's like pace is like there's nothing changing. So like honestly, there's not much to say unless you just start like telling a story about like everyone in the field. Like I don't really know.
That's literally what it was last year at the 10. I was like, it was obviously everyone was just being paced and it wasn't boring because I liked watching the race, but then coming up with things to talk about, I was like, Carissa is my roommate and she was excited for this one, you know, like that's basically all I could say. And then Jeff was spewing off like stuff about people's like times or like what the American record was and when this person, I'm like, I don't have any of this information. I don't know anything, but it was fun.
You had the inside scoop on Carissa and her living habits. You should have shared with the,
well, you know, the world. It wasn't, Carissa didn't really live any, like there's something that I would bring up that would be like revolutionary, you know?
Yeah.
Carissa's a good roommate. There we go. That's like all the information I really have. And she's never home because she's always at altitude. There you go. Her cats are cool.
That'll get you 20 seconds of the race.
Literally. And then I have 30 more minutes to go. So we'll all watch that race and cheer for everyone and watch you go after the American record. And Morgan will be watching too.
Yeah, so. Apparently. Apparently Morgan is.
He's your number one fan, actually. You told
American
me.
Record attempt.
Yeah. Are you going to be at indoors?
No, I'm not. I really want to race it, but it's only like a week before the 10K. I wish the 10K was like a week later because then I would definitely do it, but yeah. Not this year.
Yeah, I was looking at the start list this morning. I didn't see your name and I was like,
yeah.
Bummer. I'm going to be there. I was going to cheer for you.
Dang.
Good old Spokane.
Yeah, the new facility looks great and the 3K and 1500 fields are loaded. So I'm very sad to miss out.
It's okay. I'm sure everyone will be watching your 10K and cheering for you. Okay, well, I've kept you here long enough. I've questioned you about everything in your life, including your biggest fears. Where can people follow you at? Where can people follow along your journey?
Instagram. That's pretty much the only place. Elise.cranny. I'm trying to uptick my posting frequency, so check out, see if I stick to it.
I believe in you.
I'm at like 3 posts for the year thus far, so I gotta step it up.
Like Courtney White there literally every day taking pics of you. I would see Carissa, like she'd just be stressing over posting on Instagram. I'm like, you have 45 pictures of yourself to choose from. They're all great. Pick one. Let's go. Share with your followers because they're cute.
Yeah, Courtney White is hooking us up with some great content. But I feel like I usually do this where I like go ham for a week while she's here and then it just like goes away. So I'm trying this year to like really stay a little bit more consistent after she leaves.
Yeah. So. It does get a little more difficult when you start having to like take the pictures yourself or be like, can you take a pic of me?
Yeah.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. I'll hold you accountable. Just DM you.
Yeah, okay, please like, do.
Waiting for please pics. Will be your first like and comment. So
please do. I need some people to hold me accountable so I actually follow through.
Okay. Well, thanks so much for coming on. I appreciate you taking the time and sharing your life with us. To close out the episode, can we get a good old peace out, fellas?
I've been waiting for this moment for like 2 years. I can't wait.
Oh my gosh. Go ahead.
Peace out, fellas.
Thank you guys so much for listening to another great episode of Convos Over Cold Brew. I literally stopped recording with Elise, and the first thing I said, I was like, that was the best episode I feel like I've had in months. I really like all of my episodes, honestly, but I just feel like Elise and I had a lot to catch up on, and we were talking a little bit before the podcast, too, and it was just great to catch up with her. I really hope I get to see her soon, though, because I miss her, and I hope you guys enjoyed catching up with us. Don't forget to rate and review on Apple Podcasts if you haven't already. That means the world to me, and follow us on Instagram. Everything is linked in the show notes, as per usual. Appreciate you all, and I will hear from you guys all next week. Peace out, fellas.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.